Coming to you live from St. Louis, Missouri.
It's the Faster Freedom Show.
With your hosts, Sam Prim and Lucas Wolf.
We're talking about freedom.
Hello and welcome to the Faster Freedom Show. My name is Sam.
And I'm Lucas.
And Lucas, we have a special guest today. I'm super excited. I've talked with her several times. You just met her about 3 minutes ago.
I know. I love getting to know our awesome guests kind of live as our audience gets to know them as well.
Yeah, because you're supposed to be here 40 minutes ago and you came here 2 minutes ago. You say that because you're late. That's why you say that.
It's just the opposite. I'm late because I feel that way.
Okay, whatever. Anyways, we have the famous Lattes and Leases, Miss Soli, with us today. I'm excited to chat. She's got a ton going on. She's pretty young. She's in her, I believe, mid-20s, and she's absolutely crushing it. She's done a ton of stuff and she's looking to do a lot more, which Lucas and I appreciate. We own 50 million in real estate. We want to own a billion. So I love people that have big dreams and big goals because I can relate to them.
Yeah, it's so fun. It sounds like had an aspiration of going full-time in real estate, saw that through, and then is doing some cool type of boutique hotel investing, which we're doing too. So a lot of similarities in our path and excited to dig into it.
She got started a little bit younger and probably a lot smarter than when we got started. So, hey, Soli, how are you doing today?
Good. That intro kind of pumped me up. I like that music.
There you go. Oh, you heard it too? Yeah, that's our intro.
I heard it.
Pretty fancy,
it was really good.
Yeah,
that was great.
I have a rap out there where I rapped. I did not do that as the intro, though. Lucas rapped a little bit in college, and I rapped a little bit recently. So we're not going to let you in on that stuff, Soli, but there is a rap side to us.
Why don't you give Soli a little taste of your hook for your Burr song?
What is it? It's B-R-R-R-S. We gonna take the S and make it a success. We gonna take the B and buy distressed. Get it? So there you go. There's my intro to my Burrs rap.
I don't think you'll be a famous rapper anytime soon, but I like to hear it.
Well, we auto-tune things. We auto-tune things and we add beats and hooks and we make it all work. So for those that don't know you, why don't you give us just a little brief intro into your story? We have some notes on everything. We'll touch a little bit as well, but just kind of, where you came from, where you are, and where you're going.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm 26. I'm based in the Bay Area, California, really expensive out there. So I built my portfolio out of state. So I have about 45 units between Cincinnati, Ohio, and Augusta, Georgia. I've flipped a bunch of properties. I've done a 64-unit multifamily syndication, and I'm sitting in Palm Springs right now in a beautiful hotel room because I'm buying a boutique hotel here.
That is good. So it's a beautiful hotel room, but your boutique hotel is going to be even more beautiful, right?
It's not going to be this one. Yeah, this is the hotel next door, actually. But it actually used to be a gay nude resort, which is kind of fun. So there's a lot of those in Palm Springs. And so it was shut down for 2 years, and we're turning it into a high-end wellness resort.
That was gay nude, right? Did I hear that?
Both.
Nice. That is,
be gay and nude.
That's quite the niche. I kind of think you need to bring that back around. I mean, that's you can probably charge more the more you niche that down, because not everybody's gonna want to go there. But if you do, you really want to go there.
You don't see those a lot in St. Louis. I'm not gonna lie.
Not a lot. No, not a ton of those gay nude resorts in St. Louis, but down in Florida,
you should try
awesome.
To open one up. I mean, I feel like you guys would be great.
Yeah, we'll curb the market there.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. Done. All right. So we're gonna come up with a business model. We'll let you come up here, and you can help run it. We'll give you some royalties
Perfect.
For coming up with the idea.
I've actually toured a couple gay nude resorts, and it's really hard for me to get in there because they're like, this is men only, right? And I'm like, yeah, this closed our eyes.
Yeah,
a lot of good
waste up.
Yeah, exactly.
So you looked at buying some gay nude resorts and you walked around and toured it and there was just a bunch of gay men walking around?
Naked.
Naked. Yeah, that's the other part, the
Pretty
naked
much.
Part. Yeah. Awesome. Well, real estate investing is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. A lot of different directions we can go with this.
I love it. That's exciting. So you started out, your full-time job was a commercial real estate broker. Is that correct?
Yeah, I worked at a Cushman & Wakefield.
Mm,
okay.
One.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah. And you were doing that, and I guess kind of walk us through that a little bit. Was your goal always real estate on your own, or was this kind of a gateway to that, or did that spark your interest actually working for them?
Yeah, I got that job in college. So I was 19, needed a paycheck, and I had a friend who knew someone who needed an intern. And so I really did not know much about real estate, but I said, hey, it sounds fine. Good paycheck, kind of fun. I was a finance major, so it kind of made sense. I ended up working there for 4 years. I did a lot of big transactions with them. I did office leasing mostly, and then we did some building sales and some land sales. Eventually the pandemic hit. So when I was a senior in college, I was going into like full-time brokerage, and it was a commission-based job. But as you know, no one wants office space during the pandemic. Very, very hard sell. And so I kind of pivoted to, I just had a lot of time on my hands and pivoted toward investing in real estate. After I bought my first one, I just like caught the bug and bought a lot really fast. I quit my job 15 months after buying my first rental. I had about 25 units, and the rest was history.
I like it. I'll let you get to this, but this is our notes on you. So we did some research. Shane did. So started investing while working on commercial real estate. COVID hit. Commercial market slowed down. Turned focus on personal real estate. Started remotely in Cincinnati. Quit her job with 25 properties in 15 months. Now turning to larger investments, multifamily and boutique. We do our research around here. Is that all correct?
Sounds about right.
Nice. All right, Lucas, you can go now.
Nice. Hey, Soli. First of all, super cool name. Is that your full first name?
It is. My brother's name is Josh, and he's my older brother. And so my mom decided to get creative with me. And she's a violinist. So it's actually the plural of solo is Soli.
Very cool. Well, I love the story behind that name. It's an awesome name, by the way. Very cool. So first of all, like 25 properties in 15 months is just unbelievable. Sam and I did this journey to become a millionaire in real estate in 5 years, and I think the first year we talk about not even buying a property, just learning. So how cool is that, number one? And then my question, I guess, is when you realize you wanted to start investing, kind of figured out the Bay Area was a little expensive, tell us what like drew you to Cincinnati, and then maybe tell us a little bit more about the details and specifics of that first deal.
Yeah, so I picked that market. I had gone for work to Cincinnati in maybe like 6 months prior to buying that first rental property. And we were doing like a really big build to suit 100,000 square foot development type of thing. And so I went out there for work, had pretty low expectations about the Midwest. No offense. I know you guys are in St. Louis, but went out there and like got toured and wined and dined by all the developers. And they're like, you know, they sold us on the market because we were from out of town. They said, over the last 10 years, they spent $1 billion investing in their downtown to make it a really fun and vibrant place. We drove down the main highway, and like everywhere you saw new commercial developments, office, retail, like mixed use. And so the place was like very vibrant, and the broker who we worked with locally owned maybe like 7 or 8 rental properties. He just mentioned it casually and said that they had like doubled in value over the past few years. And so fast forward six months, I wasn't really interested in the time in investing, but the pandemic hit and it kind of changed my priorities. And I said, I really need to build some type of passive income. Obviously, I can't invest in the Bay Area because I was 22 and didn't have much money. And so I called him up and said, hey, would you like jump on a Zoom call with me and walk me through Cincinnati as a market? Like, do you have a realtor I could talk to? And it happened really fast. From that first conversation to closing on my first rental, it was 12 weeks. So I went under contract in, I don't know, you know, 60 days and closed 4 weeks later.
Nice. Did you find that deal on the MLS?
Yeah, it was just on Zillow, and I saw that they had, you know, went under contract, dropped out of contract. I sent it to my realtor. It's a single family house, long-term rental, bought it for $98,000. I then flew out to go see it because my parents thought I was crazy. Like, you bought a house off the internet, you never saw it, type of thing. And so I flew out with my mom. I spent 4 weeks like sleeping on the floor. And that's actually how I grew my Instagram, because people thought it was ridiculous, which honestly, it was ridiculous. Yeah. The things I did to renovate that property. But 6 months later, I got appraised for $155,000. And I ended up burning that property.
Nice. We're big Burr fans over here, as you know. So that's impressive. So you just went all in. So that's one way to do it. Like, our plan was like, hey, tell people to learn, and you just said, I'm going to learn on the job, literally sleeping on the floor. So that is awesome.
Yeah,
that's very good. Good for you. That's really cool. So now I guess you quickly realized the Bay Area wasn't going to work for you, and we have, you know, we have like 1,600 students and probably 200 or 300 of them in California, and most of them do the remote investing. And I know you have Remote Investor Academy you can talk a little bit about. So why don't you walk through a little bit of how that came about? Because it sounds like you're over in that kind of east Midwest and down south there through Cincinnati down to Georgia. So talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about you know, that process and kind of the differences at investing in person and remote, and kind of what most newbies should look at when they're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people think it's going to be harder to invest remotely, but I actually find it to be easier because you are forced to set up your business in a way where there are professional people taking care of your properties and being that kind of frontline, taking care of your tenants and leasing your properties. I've seen properties in person. I've bought without seeing them. Like, I buy it and then I go see it, and I'm way more scared after seeing it because I don't know anything about renovation. But when I see them, and it's like, I get the right contractor in place, I have the right property manager in place, and they've done this a million times before me. It's really just about how strong is your team. So a lot of people, you know, think about, how do I pick a market? It's so hard to pick a market. There's so many markets to choose from. I always say, go to where you have the best competitive advantage, and that competitive advantage is where you have the best team, because a great team is make or break in those situations when you're not physically there to touch and feel it.
Nice. I like it. So you've got 45 now. How have you funded most of these? With the Burr method, private lenders, hard money? Talk a little bit about your funding sources, and we'll pass it on to Walls. And by the way, anybody watching across the platform, see some chats going on, feel free to ask Soli a question, and we will, if it's a good enough question, we will ask her it ourselves.
Cool. So the first one was my own money. I was pretty adamant about doing everything by myself so that my own money was on the line when I was learning and making mistakes. I mean, way too many mistakes the first time. Second property was actually with private money. So my mom reached out after watching me on Instagram and said, like, can I invest in your next deal? Didn't know what private money was, but I read some books and said, okay, how about like 7% interest rate? Best rate I've ever negotiated so far. And then I went into, like, you know, hard money, and then I went back to private money. So now these days, pretty much the entirety of my deals are funded by private money, mostly with debt. So exactly what you talk about, you know, find a private lender, fund it 100% through private money, and then do the Burr method or flip those houses.
Very cool.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're building up, you built up to 25 in 15 months. And were those all in Cincinnati, those first 25 solely?
Yeah, they're actually all within maybe like a 10-minute driving distance from each other. So I'm like very into niching down where you invest, because the more you can learn, it's very street by street. As you probably know, living in the Midwest, it's, you like go over this one street and it's like, dang, that's a scary neighborhood. And so I really know, like, street by street, what streets are good and bad. And so even today, like the last property I bought, I own 5 within 4 blocks of each other. So all of my properties are very close by to each other.
Very cool. So 25 and 15 months in a close, small radius in Cincinnati. And then did you have the full-time job still at this point? It was just slower, or have you already made the jump? And just kind of talk about what that looked like, making a jump to a full-time investor.
Yeah, so I had my full-time job, and I think they noticed that I really was not, you know, paid attention too much of my job. It's commission-based, so like you kind of eat what you kill. So in my mind, I was like, well, they're not paying me anyways. I can spend my free time at work. And I think that they also saw that and saw, like, hey, you've got, like, at that time, maybe it was like 25, 30,000 followers, and you're building a business. I started coaching. And at some point I realized, you know, I was at the bottom of the totem pole in the brokerage world. And so I was literally like, you do my financial analysis, like you do this and that. And I said, you know, I think in real estate, I have a bigger opportunity to grow something. Worst case scenario, I come back and get a job at this commission-based brokerage firm. And I think they'd take me back because you don't get paid a salary. And so I had, you know, enough income to cover all of my expenses. I had enough in the pipeline where I had, you know, I could work on construction projects full time, and it would take all of my time project managing them. And so I just kind of said, you know what, worst case scenario, I go back to exactly where I am today.
No, I like that. That makes sense. Lucas was working an engineering job, and he was supposed to be get paid by the hour and charged by the hour. And he was taking 3-hour lunches and leaving early, going checking on property.
Yeah.
So he kind of did it similarly, but a little bit different, just went for it. And then at the right time, pulled the plug, right?
Yes. I did my work though, Sam, like when I put in my 2 weeks or whatever, they were like, I was like, I'm sure you've noticed. They're like, no, not at all. So I was still getting shit done, Prem.
I would say that's more lack of good management, knowing that you were taking 3-hour freaking lunches, but whatever. So you got started young, and which every successful person I know says two things in common. One, they wish they would have started earlier, and two, they all wish or eventually get coaching or type of guidance. You know, the successful people I've noticed, they put their ego aside and they pay for somebody else's knowledge or experience to learn the more grooved path. So it sounds like you've done that a lot to a varying degree, and now you're teaching other people how to do it. I know you talk about private lender training. I know you got your out-of-state investor academy. You got an in-person event coming up here in a few weeks. So I guess talk a little bit about that journey for you as far as like leaning on other people's knowledge and then deciding to, hey, I've done some pretty cool stuff and feel like I have a good approach enough where I'm going to try to, you know, put this knowledge on other people. So kind of talk through that if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, very early on, I joined a mastermind. I think at the time it was even like a free mastermind because they were just getting started. But it was what originally taught me to think bigger. So originally, I had no friends in real estate. I didn't know anyone. My parents didn't invest in real estate. I was just kind of like on an island alone. And I saw this like mastermind group that was meeting every week. And I said, okay, I'm going to at least make some investor friends. And they totally changed my entire mindset about what was possible. So one of the first exercises we did was to create big goals that scared you. And for me, I was like, I have no foresight. All I wanted to do is like buy one rental property and like, I don't know if it works out, maybe I'll buy another one. But then they forced us to actually like write on paper and present to the class what we were going to do. And at the time, I wrote out this like extensive business plan where I was going to get 45 units by the time I was 30 and quit my job. And to me, I like put it out on the internet. You can still find it in my feed way long ago. And I was like, this feels extraordinarily scary to put out there, but I have put it out there to my 300 followers. And to me, I'm going to do it because I promised that I would do it. Now I did that much faster, like 5 years faster than I expected to do it. But it was that like original thought process of thinking bigger and then making friends. Those friends are the same people who are my best friends today. And two of my friends are who I'm buying the hotel with. And so you never know, like with these relationships, the connections and just like the mindset shift, a lot of people do it by themselves, but don't realize how much better it is to do it with a community, because it's just not the average everyday life that most people have.
Yeah, no, that is really cool. We, something similar, our first goal was one house a year for 10 years. We've done 1,000. Our second goal was, you know, 25 million real estate by 2025. So similar, exact same thing to you. We made these goals that seemed big at the time that weren't. So that's why we upped our game and kind of, you know, have goals of owning an NBA team and $1 billion in real estate. So what has opening your mind, you know, through what you did, you know, a few years ago to now, what are kind of your bigger goals you have out there now to kind of shoot for?
Oh, was it you who shared your goals just like a day or two ago on Instagram? And it was like, yeah, private jet, this or that.
Yeah,
and it was like, what's your big goals? And I saw that. I'm like, I think I need to do the goal setting exercise again, because I don't feel like I've recalibrated my goals to where I am today. It's just opportunities keep coming up. And I don't really feel like I've remade my big goals. But right now, the vision is creating like a high-end hospitality company. This was like my someday dream that I told myself someday when I built myself enough cash flow, when I built myself enough stability, when I put in the work and I deserve it, I'm going to work on really fun design projects that test myself and provide really unique experiences. I wanted to build a health and wellness center. And just because of all of the health issues I've gone through, that it's really something that's near and dear to my heart. And so it's crazy to me that someday is now. We're buying it, we're going to turn it into a high end wellness resort. And it's even I even have to stop myself and think, even up until a month ago, I said, someday I want to do this. But someday is literally, we're closing in a month. So I think I need to go close myself in a room and recalibrate my goals and come out with maybe not owning an NBA team, but something similar to that.
Whatever you put out there will happen to a certain degree. We've noticed that with things happen as you have opportunities thrown your way. You've taken them on and tackled them. But something I'm sure you've noticed, we've noticed too, the more intentionality you have, the more those things tend to come your way. Last question for me for now, and then I'll hand it to Lucas because you just kind of played into it. So you put intentionality out there. You had a challenge to get a boutique hotel under contract, and you put that on your Instagram. And pretty quickly after you did that, you got one. So can you kind of talk through that challenge, how that came about and how that ended up playing out?
Yeah, so I put a challenge on Instagram I've always been I'm going to share the journey. I'm going to share the ups and downs. I don't like to be seen as a guru per se. I just want to share what I'm doing and what I learn. And so I said, why don't I just become a student and share again on Instagram, my journey of trying to find a boutique hotel in 60 days. And I put it out there because to me, it seemed, I even was asking my partners, do you think that's too aggressive? And they're what about 90 days? And I was no, 60 days seemed a little scary. And then 14 days in, we went under contract, which is insane. But mm-hmm. I was talking to one of my friends, and again, my whole thing is you get what you ask for. And I was at this networking event for real estate entrepreneurs or something, and I just mentioned it I would really like to get a boutique hotel, we had just fallen out of contract on a different one. And she said, I actually own one, and I have the best broker in Palm Springs for you. And then that next weekend was down in Palm Springs, toured the market, found the perfect one, put an offer in, and it's boom boom done. And so it's just crazy how fast it came together. But if I would have never asked for that or put it out into the world, people would have never known that I was looking for it.
Yeah, I think recalibrating your vision or your goals or whatever that looks like to you is super important. I think we can just kind of get lost in the race sometimes mm-hmm. and not take a step back and recalibrate those goals, number one, to force us to think bigger. But also, it's kind of a reflection point, we've really done a lot and we should be proud of some things that we've accomplished. So that's been mm-hmm. a good trigger for us and a mechanism to kind of go back and redo that. But yeah, like you said, it could be 8 months and it goes by and we're like, shit, we gotta redo this. So I definitely understand the importance there. Solely, before we dig too much deeper into your new hotel project. So you built up a rental portfolio in Cincinnati, and then you kind of transitioned into focusing a little bit in Augusta, Georgia. And can you tell us a little bit about some of those investments? And are they long-term rentals? Are they Masters tournament focus, short-term rentals around the golf course?
Yeah, everyone, when I tell them I invest there, they're like, oh, lucky, do you play golf there? And I'm like, no. but they're actually all flips. I own an office building out there. But most of them are flips just because I met a partner actually on that same mastermind that I talked to you about. So originally we met there. We stayed in contact, and he owns a construction firm out there and a property management firm and a brokerage firm. And so it was a really easy pitch. I am not the best person to manage construction. I just don't like doing it. And so I was doing it in Cincinnati for all of our projects and really just asking him questions and saying, how do I do this? Contractors aren't taking me seriously. What do I didn't know nothing about construction. What's the difference between this big of drywall and this, whatever. And so he was like, how about we just partner up and I'll run the construction and you raise the money? Because I have such a big network and it's pretty easy for me to raise money for projects. And I was like, yeah, that's the perfect win-win scenario. That's exactly what you look for in a partnership. We've known each other for years. We trusted each other. You bring a really specific skill set that I need, and I don't have to manage construction, which I don't want to do. And so I ended up moving, we still buy in Cincinnati, but picking up and moving and flipping over there. And we flipped maybe 30 properties in the last 2 years. Not as big as your guys' operation, but it's been a good source of capital.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, every deal that you've been talking about or key point to your investing career, you talk about how there's some other partner or person that is able to help you on this deal or this investment journey. And we talk about this a lot, that real estate investing in particular is a very relationship type business. And it feels like to me, Soli, that you're just an expert relationship builder and being able to connect the pieces together. If you want to just touch on that, what do you think the importance of building strong relationships in a network in real estate investing?
Yeah, definitely all about the relationships. It's like kind of the whole who, not how. To be honest, haven't read the book. I just read the title. Everyone tells me you just have to read the title and you get the gist of it. But it's just like, you know, how can you find the person to open the door for you? And I think that's much faster than trying to figure it out by yourself. Before I had partners, again, like I was so adamant on doing every single thing by myself. And I think it was more of like an ego thing. I need to fund it. I need to manage it. I need to do everything. And when I unlocked, you know, partnerships, mentorships, just like general connections and leaned on other people, I just, things started opening up a lot faster. So I always say I will never go back to working alone.
Yeah, very cool. I think Sam and I have a very similar belief. You know, sacrifice some of the profit, which is just fine, to put us in our genius zones, and being able to, you know, give more back to the business where it makes us happy, but also the business stronger as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to touch on something you mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, running projects and being newer and having contractors, you know, not take you as serious, because this is something that we're pretty adamant about. So, you know, we have a community and a mentorship, and, you know, we have a lot of males and females in there. And we've noticed, obviously, by being in the space, that real estate investing generally is a male-dominated space, with the contractors as well as the investors. I have two daughters, and I want to help change that. And I love seeing women out there in the space. And we created a group coaching call a week that's just women-led, women-attended, to kind of create that space and help strengthen that. So can you talk a little bit about what it's like being a woman in the space? Is it, you know, what are some of the challenges that you feel like you face that maybe some women watching or listening can take some tidbits at and kind of help, you know, shorten that curve? Because my goal is to make it just as accessible and just, you know, the space that has just as many males as females.
Yeah, your daughter's really cute. I saw her little pig impersonation.
Yeah, she got aggressive with that. She got into it.
It's good. I was like, you're committed to that.
She was.
Anyways, people watching this later, it will have disappeared and they'll be sad they missed it.
Yes,
but
they will.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like there's not a huge disadvantage to being a woman, because there are so many women who are specifically dedicated to like lifting you up. Like, I feel like men are kind of a dime a dozen, and it's harder to stand out in the real estate investing industry. But you see a woman being really successful and everybody kind of bands together. Even men, like honestly, like you, Pace Morby, everybody's super nice. Like they want to lift women up, and there's not as many of them. And so I feel very supported in that way. I think the hardest is probably on the contractor side, where they like want to ask you out every other time you're on site. And that's like not super fun. But you can also play the card of like, I don't know. I think that's the hardest part, because if you don't really know what you're doing, they can kind of take advantage of you. And so that's why I didn't necessarily enjoy managing construction. If I'm out of state though, and I only talk to them on the phone, they could think I'm a 50-year-old woman who like knows my stuff. And so I find even that is a little bit easier, because the minute I show up on a job site, I'm like 5'2" and look like I'm 15, and they just don't take me seriously.
So Soli, how many dates have you been on with contractors?
one.
Oh, it's because you should say zero. Don't give your contractors hope. Say zero.
No, yeah, there was a guy who helped me tile my house when I first went to Cincinnati, and it's very, very helpful. I got some free labor for that. So
there you go. So you're saying you're giving all your contractors a chance now. You shouldn't have done that. You're going to be getting messages all the time.
Zero people.
That is funny. Well, that's awesome and good. I'm glad that, you know, I know that we are very big at, you know, the quality and everything here, and trying to lift people up. So that's good that you see a lot of that. And I do see that in the space. A lot of people are doing that. So that is awesome.
Cool. Ginger has some great comments up here. We're going to get to some of her actual questions as we move into the boutique hotel. But yeah, she mentions that the pie is big enough for everyone to share. Everyone has a piece. I like saying, you know, I'd rather have a slice of the watermelon than the whole grape.
Well, you say that because other people say you didn't make that. You didn't invent that.
I never said that. I said, oh. I like saying that.
Okay. All right. Fine.
my favorite saying. But anyways, we'll get to some of Ginger's stuff here. Thanks for being so active, Ginger. Appreciate you. But let's talk about, you know, having some projects in Augusta and then your idea and vision for the boutique hotel, and maybe talk a little more details on that project as far as, you know, what's it going to be for, purchase price, rehab cost, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when does this podcast come out is the big question.
Well, it's live right now. Okay. It'll be out. It'll be out next week as far as the recordings.
Live. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I'll share, but it's listed.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, whatever you can share is good.
yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Back now.
You're good. Yeah.
Okay. $3 million listed price, and it's two blocks from downtown Palm Springs. Like I mentioned, it was a gay nude resort, and now we're turning it into a high-end wellness resort with like a salt sauna, cold plunges, vitamin drips, like that type of thing. There's a really high-end market here in Palm Springs, so you can get everything from like Motel 6 for $50 type of thing to the Kimpton for $1,000. And like Soho House just is opening up a Palm Springs location. They bought their place for $1 million a key, which is insane. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, a really high-end market here. It's 2 hours from LA, 2 hours from it's nice because
yeah, that so it sounds like it's something that, you know, it's pretty expensive per door, but not like that. But the market that you're in is crazy as far as the people that have the money there. So why are you doing the wellness kind of thing? Talk a little about that. It sounds like there's some personal reasons for that with your past. But is that the main reason, just to kind of be a differentiator in the space and be able to, you know, have a premium product out there? Or is it kind of strictly because it's kind of near and dear to you?
So there is a hole in the Palm Springs market for wellness. So Desert Springs is maybe like 20, 30 minutes away, and they have natural hot springs. They have really high-end wellness spas where people fly in on their private jets and do that whole thing. But there's really no, there's nothing out there. There's a Carl's Jr. and a gas station type of thing. And so people want to be in downtown Palm Springs. Nobody's offering that wellness product. I think there's a really big gap in the market because of that we're able to come in and charge higher prices. But the personal reason is just like last year, I spent 6 to 9 months like recovering from a parasite, which was just awful. And so I feel like, you know, there was days on end where I just kind of like laid in bed and didn't do anything at all. And it was the first time in my life where I've ever had a health issue. And I connected with so many people who have like chronic health conditions, and it's just something that like, it was a really challenging time in my life, and something that made me also appreciate health and taking care of your body and relaxing and, you know, self-care and that type of thing, that it's something that I've always wanted to provide and experience as well.
That's super cool. What is the all that cool stuff that you want to put in there, like the sauna, the salt tub or whatever that was? What does a rehab project look like on that, from like you know, managing it, a cost perspective and a timeline perspective?
And funding it. I mean, I'm assuming private fundings, but yeah, walk through that a little bit. Obviously, don't get into the exact numbers.
Yeah, so we have a bridge lender on the project that's funding like 60 to 70% loan to cost. And so they're going to fund, you know, 50% of the construction amount. And then we're getting private, like basically a syndication for the rest of it. So we'll have equity investors in the project. The actual project renovation is like maybe $900,000. And a lot of that is spent on building, you know, the outside, the amenities. We're building like a fully conditioned area because Palm Springs is known for like buyouts, parties, Coachella, wedding venues. And so building like a fully timeline wise, 6 to 8 months is actually not very long. And so we'll be up and running before the end of the year.
That's nice. Moving quick on something like that. Yeah, our boutique hotel, we had a $400,000 rehab budget on like a napkin. And then we ran the numbers and we said it's going to be $700,000. And how much did we end up spending, Lucas?
About 1.2.
So we're not very good at estimating either. It was only double our actual hard budget, or almost double our hard budget. So that will not happen to you. You will be on your numbers.
Yeah, it looks like there's some interest in like some of these boutique hotels, and I think they're really it was just a really fun project for us, and I kind of see that being for you as well, just a little bit different and outside the normal Burr single family rental. It kind of just got my juices flowing, so it's been so fun. Someone on the chat, Ginger, talked about wanting to do something similar in Kansas City, specifically for either handicap accessible or wheelchair accessible, the entire place. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or wanted to provide any guidance or feedback for Ginger.
Ooh, I have no idea. I am not a code. So I'm sure there's a market for it because a lot of places are like just not accessible.
Yeah, we started sharing our story about our
niche you want to fill out. I feel like it would be good.
Sorry about that, Soli, but we started sharing our story about the our hotel, our resort, and we got a couple people inquire about it, but like I hope it's wheelchair accessible, you know. And so we kind of saw the market kind of open up for it a little bit with a couple people reaching out. So we decided to do one of the units, one of our 18, you know, handicapped spots, parking wise, and then fully wheelchair accessible. It's not ADA compliant because that's a whole different ball game, but rehabbing the unit to handicap accessible was an extra about $12,000, I believe. So
we're already a million over budget. Might as well just keep going.
Well, that's
right?
One of the reasons why. These are the type of decisions we made.
Okay. I wasn't involved in those, but I'm kidding.
That is something to be on the lookout for. It's not just your normal replacing your floors and your lighting and your painting and cosmetics. There is some structural things that you got to do: widen doorways, completely new bathrooms, new countertop heights. So I would make sure you budget for an extra, I don't know, 10 grand a unit on top of
it. Telling Ginger to budget for that. Nice. Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's take a little bit of a pivot here and dive a little bit on your socials, because you have almost 150,000 on Instagram, so you've grown that from scratch in a pretty short period of time and got a really, really strong audience there. So was the purpose of starting social media just to kind of get your story out there and, you know, put it out in the universe? Was the goal always to have some type of coaching associated with it? Because, you know, you're one of the bigger people in the space on social media, so you want to kind of talk through the reasons behind the social media and where that's going?
Really, there was no plan at all. There's no agenda. It was just to make friends. So again, like I don't have family who invest in real estate, didn't have any friends invested in real estate. And so I felt, and it was the pandemic. And so I was living alone in this little tiny apartment, sheltering in place. And so I was like, well, at least I'll make some friends on Instagram and they won't think I'm crazy because they're doing the same thing. And really that was it. Like I had no intentions of doing anything, didn't have any huge goals for real estate. Didn't try to go viral, but I think it was the kind of strength of the relationships and someone who was young and actually taking action and not afraid to show some of the bad things that happened, became just such a story. A lot of wait till they're successful to share, but I really feel like there's an audience who wants to watch, like kind of like a reality TV show. Like they're like, will she be successful? Will she fail? That was all I did, and I didn't really think I took it seriously until maybe I hit like 50,000 or 60,000 followers, and people started asking me like, so how'd you do it? Like, how'd you pick a market? How'd you build your team? And I started doing a little bit of coaching and kind of grew from there.
That's awesome. So So now you're a celebrity, so congrats there. We'll get your autograph if I ever clap. I was going to say next time I meet you, but I've never met you. When I do meet you, I'll get your autograph. So what do you like better? Do you like doing the real estate investing, or do you like doing the branding and coaching, or is one, you know, not really ahead of the other?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I mean, I like both. I think they fulfill different like needs, I guess. I think it's incredibly I like the knowledge in my head has the power to change someone's life. And I think that's insane that I can say that at such a young age. I've helped people, you know, who are like 60 years old change the trajectory of their retirement. And to me, that's like deeply meaningful. And I just didn't realize I'd ever have the opportunity to do that. And so I think from that perspective, it's really fulfilling to be able to give back to people. On the real estate side of things, I really enjoy what I'm doing now. Like I told you before, we do a lot of like cookie cutter flips, buy a lot of rental properties, incredible for building wealth long-term, but creatively, it's not that creative. It's like the same fixtures, the same paint, the same flooring. It's awesome to build wealth like that. But I think what we're working on right now really lights me up from a creativity standpoint.
Very cool. Are you ready for a curveball, or do you got something in line with that?
She can hit your curveball. You can never throw a curveball anyway. It's going to come out just like a slow fastball. So throw it at her. She'll knock it out of the park.
Just a spinner hurt my elbow trying to throw it. All right, curveball. What's one thing on your bucket list you're determined to accomplish or do or experience in the next couple of years?
Besides your boutique hotel, because that one's already checked off or will be.
I go to Iceland. I've been trying to convince my friends to go see the Northern Lights. I love like nature vacations, and Iceland looks like out of this world. Yeah. So put me on like a Northern Lights tour for 14 days and I'm going to turn off my phone. No one talks to me. Like, oh, I can't wait to do that.
Yeah. It seems like traveling excites you. Is there any other cool places that you've already been to, Soli?
I've been a lot of places. I basically quit my job and I traveled. So that's really why I quit my job, is I was like tired of being chained to my desk. And so the minute I quit my job, I traveled for like 12 months. So I went to Costa Rica, Guatemala, Portugal, Mexico City, lived there for a little bit. Went to Spain, went to Ireland, went to a lot of places. And so I'm going to Italy for 3 weeks this year. And that was one of my bucket list items. Is originally, when I signed my full-time job offer for Cushman & Wakefield, I put inside my job offer, like, you will let me go to Italy for 2 months. And they said, okay, no problem. But then COVID hit in 2020, Italy kind of just like shut down forever. And so I've been trying to go for 4 years at this point. And so in September, I'm going for 3 weeks. And I told my team, you will not hear from me. Don't try to talk to me. So I'm really excited for that too.
I like it. My parents are in Italy right now, so that is fun.
Eating some fettuccine.
Fettuccine, drinking some wine, eat some pasta. That is really cool. So another curveball for you. What would you say is the thing that you do on a daily, weekly side of your business basis that you don't enjoy doing, but you do because nobody else is to do it, or you just know it has to be done? Because so many people, I feel like, they only do stuff that they want to do, and they think they're too good or too big to do certain tasks that probably move the needle. So is there something that pops to your mind? You're like, I don't really like doing it, but I have to do it just to kind of move the needle or keep the business moving.
Managing people. Oh, it's tough. I feel like there are people who love managing people, and then there's me. And so maybe I'm just like not experienced at it yet. It's a skill that they don't teach you in school. You just, like, no one teaches you how to be a leader. And so I think it's something that's been really challenging for me to learn, is like, how do I lead a company? How do I manage people? How do I motivate people? I'm a very self-motivated person. And so I've never had to be motivated to do anything. And so me trying to like relate to employees and being like, well, what career path do you want? How do we make your dreams come true? How do we stay on task? Like, how do we get this project management thing up and going? It's something that I never expected to need to learn how to learn, but it's something that I do daily basis now that is very challenging.
That is challenging. There's so many different personalities, and everybody likes to be led a different way. But yeah, I think it starts with understanding the difference between a manager and a leader, right? You can be an excellent leader and then put people in place to do the actual day-to-day managing, because some people, like you said, Soli, they love that day-to-day management of people, but it is a grind, and it takes the right person to do that. So great points there, Soli.
Yeah, we're big on leadership in our team, and trying to create a culture and environment. It's a huge lift. Lucas does a lot of that. Like, we have a bags tournament right now that's starting here in about half an hour in our office and in our conference, you know, banquet area. We drew names at our meeting, and we offering a few $100 reward for the winner, and we're playing a bags tournament this afternoon and letting everybody drink and hang out to try and help with that leadership and that culture. So that's something that's on the forefront for us, and we're always learning. We're figured out a lot, but there's a lot more to learn. All right, so you got anything else, or I was going to get into the over unders?
No, let's do some more curveballs.
Okay, throw her another curveball. She knocked that one. She knocked mine out of the park.
She crushed yours. Probably a single.
I would give. She did a double for you. She hit a grand slam on mine.
Okay. All right. Outside of real estate or personal brand or coaching, if you could become instantly an expert in any other field or skill, what would it be?
Oh, no. I think you paused. I think I heard that you said, if I could become an expert in any field, what would it be?
Yeah.
Outside of real estate. Yeah.
Probably functional health. It's something that like saved my life, because I went to a million different doctors, and they would really said, go see. And I think like that's another level of like the amount of people I meet who think that living with a stomach ache is normal is like insane. And so if I could be an expert in that and help them, I think it would be another just like life changing skill to have.
Very cool. When you say functional health, Soli, is that like, chiropractor type stuff, you know, needling, diet and matching your diet to your blood type, all that type of stuff? Or am I missing something there?
It's a mixture of that and like being able, there's like functional health diagnostic testing, which is much more comprehensive than like Western medicine type of thing. And there are certain like herbs and supplements and diet that you need to follow in order to solve chronic illnesses. Like a lot of chronic illnesses are not actually what people think they are. They're solvable from a whole bunch of different.
Yeah. That would be a good one. Both of those are super.
Both of
cool.
Those are really good. Yeah. My oldest daughter, we talked about my youngest daughter doing the pig sounds, but yeah, she had like a stomach, and like if you're not experiencing it, and like she had like a stomach ache for a long time, and after she had the stomach bug, and we just took her to the doctor, and they're like, yeah, there was an infection that's been lingering for you know months from the stomach bug and all that goes into, you know, getting sick for a week straight. So yeah, that living with stomach ache is, I agree with that. I've been living with someone that's had a stomach ache for a month. So
pretty close, right?
No, but it just rung true, Lucas. All right, let's get into the over-under now. So Lucas and I usually, we host this on Wednesdays. It's just us two. We have fun, you know, talk about our business and stuff. And then Fridays we have guests, and we play some games that we like to play, like true-false or would-you-rather kind of things. But for you, we got over-under. So we're all three playing. We don't know the answer. So I'll start with the first one, Lucas, and then you can go and then we'll ask Soli. So, all right, Lucas, the Earth collectively receives 2 billion robocalls per month. Over or under 2 billion robocalls in a month?
I think it's over.
Over 2 billion. Yeah. So there's 8 billion people in the world. So you're saying a quarter of the people are getting called every month?
Probably 10 times a month.
Okay. So Luke says over. What do you say, Soli? How do you think it's over or under 2 billion robocalls a month?
Over, because I get at least 10 a month as well.
Yeah. I was going to go under, but you guys all right, fine. I'm going under. Yeah. What's the answer? Over 2.4 billion.
Much over.
Not much over. That was a tight one, Shane. Thinking of that one, you got to at least be doubled. So you and Lucas won that one. All right, Lucas, do the next one. What?
Yeah, you got to buy.
Is there a prize?
$400 million is not small.
$400 million is not small. Shane says that's true. The prize is a virtual high five. I think we don't do prizes. But yeah. All right, there's two more.
All right, second one here. The TSA in safety tests misses 75% of dangerous material. I hope that's not true. I'm going to say under.
What about you, Soli?
I'm going to say under. I feel like they'd find it at maybe 60%.
So you're saying under? I'm going to say over. I'm just going to be the opposite of you guys.
You just be wrong.
What do we got? Over 95. That's not true, Shane. It says 95% TSA misses dangerous. So I don't even carry dangerous materials with me. So
you don't.
Well, no. I mean, it wasn't legal. Now it's legal.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, we can throw the flag. We do it quite often on Shane. So
appeal.
All right.
I double checked just to make sure because I knew you were going to say something, and ABC had an article about it.
Ooh, boom! ABC. There you go, Lucas.
Man,
gosh,
that is not.
Do we trust ABC?
That's true, dude. There you go, Soli. I like it, but if it ever makes Lucas wrong, I'm good with it. I don't question it. All right. The third one is 60% of retirements in the U.S. are not voluntary, over under. So 60% of people are forced to retire is what it sounds like.
Sounds about right.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because they just can't perform the job anymore hanging around.
Yeah, I'm going to say under and go 50%. What about you guys?
Totally, you're up. What do you think?
I'm gonna say under because you gave us two overs, and so the odds of it being under are higher.
I like it. Kayola says ABC is the devil. That is aggressive, Kayola. So yes, I like that logic, but sometimes I do that, and you know, we play true or false, or like, you know, I stump Lucas with riddles, or I don't. They write them, but I ask Lucas the riddles, and sometimes they'll do that. But I agree with you. I'm gonna go under. That seems a little aggressive. What do we got? Under 53%, so we got that one right.
Let's go.
We were all 2 for 3.
Team efforts.
Team effort. Hey, triple high five. Let's go. Boom.
Doom, hey.
There you go. It's like the Power Rangers thing.
I'm the Red Ranger.
You're the Red Ranger? I'll be the blue one. Yeah, I guess, sure. Soli, what do you want to be? Which Power Ranger do you want to be?
What colors are? I don't watch Power Rangers. Is it yellow?
White and pink? Yellow.
There's yellow, pink, white, yellow. Yeah, yeah, so you want to be the yellow one?
I'll be the yellow one.
Like that lipstick in the picture behind you?
That's more orange a little bit.
Yeah.
There you go. those two queen beds or two double beds with the split.
Oh, they didn't have any other ones. It's Coachella right now, but I got to show you this. I wish I could show you this like patch on the wall. I don't know if you can really see it.
Yeah.
They literally just, they stapled it because it fell off.
There you go.
And they plopped it and stapled it on there.
Is that like wallpaper? Is that what that is?
Yeah,
or they stapled the drywall.
Yeah.
Oh, wallpaper.
They stapled the wall, like someone ripped it off, and so they literally put a wall patch on it, and they stapled the wallpaper back onto the wall.
Get shit done there. I like it.
Might be a prize behind there.
There you go. Yeah, peel it back. See what's back there. There looks somebody was having fun in there. That is awesome. Cool. Awesome. Well, Soli, we appreciate you joining us today. Anything you want to tell the audience about? I know you got some stuff coming up with your in-person event and your Investor Academy. Talk a little about that and where they can find you and the best place to send them if they want to connect with you, because we've had quite a few people talk about you in the chat box about how awesome you are and how they're going to start following you.
Oh, great. Instagram is the best place. It's Lattes and Leases. And we are having an event in May. So May 20th is our first Out-of-State Investor Academy in-person event, but anyone can go. It's all about scaling your portfolio. It's in Los Angeles, May 20th. And then for those who are looking to learn how to invest out-of-state, choose your market, build your team, we have a whole community for that as well. It's called Out-of-State Investor Academy. And if you go to my Instagram, you can just find everything there too.
Awesome. So is Lucas and I's invite to come out to your event is probably in the mail still or something, I would guess.
Yeah.
Want to come take the private jet over?
There you go.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun. That'd be very expensive. Private jet from St. Louis to L.A. and back, my guess is 50? 75?
50 no. to 75, somewhere in that range.
A little rich for our blood right now. You never know.
Yeah. Maybe we have a good month.
Next jet. Like a NextJet membership.
We have a membership for the local one here in St. Louis called Spirit Jets, same thing but local. But it still costs money just the membership. But we've taken it a few times. We're not regular PJers yet, just occasional.
Yeah.
the goal. But it's on the vision board. So I saw it on your vision board. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It will happen. It will happen. Well, awesome. We appreciate you joining us. We're getting ready to shoot our – we crumble up the outlines at the end of every episode, and there's a trash can below your face, actually, with a camera on it that we shoot and keep score of who makes more. So we will let you roll out on that, and we appreciate you very much. And as always, me and you, I feel like we chat about once a month maybe on Instagram, so we'll keep that going, and we'll be meeting soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right,
yeah,
see you. Thank
nice
you.
Nice to meet you, Soli.
Bye. Nice to meet
all right,
you.
Sam, let's shoot.
You're
let's
going shoot. Down, Walls. I'm up one still, I think.
Yep, you are. Here we go. Hear me? Ooh.
Wow. Stop that. Kobe.
Buckets.
That was
back of the rim. Back of the rim in the can. All right, we're tied. Ooh, Sam's up one. See you guys later.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you got some major value from our conversation. If you love what you learn, make sure you like, rate, review the show, and help us spread the word by telling a friend.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me inside one of my programs, we'll have those links in the show notes, along with all our social media handles, so you connect with us there for free. If there's a real estate question you'd like us to answer, feel free to send us a message, and we'll cover it in an upcoming show.